In terms of what the system was, and this is not going to be particularly welcome news to you, but the model of the triangular trade is a metaphor. The model in which Britain equips slave ships with goods, sends them to the coast of Africa, exchanges them from enslaved people, then enslaved people are transported through the Middle Passage to the Caribbean, to the Americas, and then sold in exchange for sugar and other tropical commodities, sugar, coffee, cotton, importantly. In the late 18th century, the primary source of cotton for Britain's incipient industrialization is in fact the Caribbean, then very quickly becomes the American South. Pimento, mahogany, so this is, I'm going to phrase this in terms of sugar, but sugar is probably 70 or 80% of the business of slavery. But that triangular trade metaphor omits important things. The trade between Britain and the colonies is a direct trade. Britain is selling goods to planters that never touch Africa, the coast of Africa, of course. If you're a slave owner, a plantation owner in Jamaica, the only place you can get kit, stuff, the mills that you use for sugar, the clothes that you wear, the pianos that you play, is the UK. So it's an export market for Britain, and that's a direct trade. And most of the sugar that comes back from the Caribbean is not carried in the 18th century by slave ships. Slave ships are not equipped to do that. Slave ships are very well equipped to carry people. So, as I say, the triangular trade is a metaphor. And most importantly, in the triangle that conventionally you'd use with your students, it treats, by definition, all three points as being equally significant. Right? That's what a triangle is. And there are, of course, importances for the Caribbean and for Africa, as Toby Green will talk about this afternoon, from this trade. Okay, I'm not denying that. But the triangle is not the right relationship to think about. Britain is the absolute center of this system. And the wealth that is created from this system flows back into Britain in a number of different ways. So the challenge, I think, is to convey in the classroom the complexity of what I'm about to describe. I'm going to give you a chart in a moment, which, again, your hearts will sing. And then Kate will talk about putting this in the context of an individual merchant, a merchant family, so that you'll get some better texture for what this actually entails. Okay, so a schematic that will not help you directly in the classroom, I suspect. But that's the only reason for reaction. It's an amateurish hand-drawn chart, as you'll see. Hands crafting is still part of the RBS tradition. But what it's intended to convey, above all, is that the centre of this system is not the slave traders, it's not the slave owners, it's these people labelled the West Indian merchants, the consignees in Britain. Okay. This is the engine room for the slave system. So there are subsystems within this. Slave traders obviously are equipping ships, they're buying trade goods, sending them out, exchanging them in the coast of Africa for enslaved people. Importantly, and again Kate will touch on this, when the slave traders arrive in the Caribbean, they have a boatload of people, many of them sick, and they need to sell them quickly and come back to Britain. They can't afford to retail the enslaved people. What they do is wholesale. Okay, so there are factors. Slave dealers in the Caribbean who are very significant in this system. And again, in the triangle of trade, they tend to get lost. Those slave factors depend in turn on their ability to provide credit to the planters by exchanging enslaved people to the planters. And the planters will send sugar to London in the future to repay that debt.
Okay. Can we ask a clarification? The slave factors, is that the people that run the ships?
No, the slave factors are the wholesalers in the Caribbean.
Okay.
So you've got at least five groups of interested people. The slave traders are people, a specialised group, particularly in Liverpool, but also in London and Bristol, and their business is equipping ships, sending them to Africa, and then having those captains carry the enslaved people to the Caribbean. Obviously, in the coast of West Africa, they deal with a very sophisticated system of provision of the enslaved people, again, Tobin will talk about that. Slave factors are wholesalers who exist in the Caribbean. The slave owners are mostly, by the end of this, the process, people living in Britain. They own the majority of slaves, but there are also significant resident slave owners in the Caribbean themselves. And they own the estates, they own the plantations, and they're either managed directly by them or indirectly through agents. And then, as I say, the center of this system is the West India merchants. The bills of exchange that are flowing through this this system in front of you are effectively IOUs. They're pieces of paper, and that's how the system works. And again, the triangular trade metaphor doesn't pick up what is happening with the financing. And in the end, the credit, the people who stand behind those bills of exchange, are the West India merchants. So without London and the City of London's function as a financial centre, this system could not have stood. And equally, without this system, the development of the City of London would have been different. The question is how different. So because of the complexity of the system, and I think the misleading simplicity of the triangular trade, because of what it emits, one of the things that would be terrific if it flows out of this project as a whole is, amongst you, is a resource for the classroom that actually conveys what should be or needs to be conveyed, I think, about the economics of this. So that we're not oversimplifying, but nor are we making this so complicated that students will be lost in the detail. And again, don't underestimate the difficulty of conveying that form of information into the classroom. So we can come back to this chart if you like, but I think it makes sense for Kate to talk about a much more concrete example to put on the table, a family who occupy this space, and then I'll come back to two other larger conceptual issues that Sydney will answer. It's not even half time, you don't need to.
Oh no, just take it, Nick. Go for it. Have as many cups as you want.